Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to a Friday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all the great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, and that free Odyssey app. 855-212-4CBS, number to jump on in, 855-212-4227. You can always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb, Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. We got a whole lot to get to today. We'll do a little college football fix coming up 20 minutes from now. The head coach of the Tulane Green Wave, Willie Fritz, going to be stopping by. Michael Carter, Jets running back, will join us at the top of the hour. And then at 8:20 p.m. Eastern, 5:20 p.m. Pacific, Liam McHugh will join us. Great job hosting the studio show, NHL on TNT. He will stop by. And what a hockey game that was last night. It looked like the Vegas Golden Knights were on the verge of going up 3-0. And then you got Tkachuk finding a way to do some damage in front of the net to tie up that game. Terrible call to go to overtime by the referees. That was not a trip. But then in overtime, you had the Panthers survive the man advantage for the Vegas Golden Knights. And then you did have Carter Verhaeghe with his overtime magic once again comes through and come up big to make this 2-1. And now all of our attention will turn to tomorrow evening, because if the Panthers can find a way to even up that series, we really then start to have a Stanley Cup final at two games apiece. And I hope the way that is how it does turn on out. And tonight in the association, this is an imperative game four, because you look at the Denver Nuggets are the better team compared to the Miami Heat. This is now a 2-1 series. We're going to see if this could be all tied up at two going back to Denver, or if this is going to be 3-1 in favor of the dominant duo of Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray going back to Denver. But first up, producing this extravaganza for the next 4 hours is no other than Hot Take Hickey.
I don't know about that Hot Take Hickey.
Hickey, I'm actually going to start the show today with some audio, and we're going to do some audio in the football world coming from Garrett Bowles, offensive lineman for the Denver Broncos. I think everyone needs a friend and a supporter and a P1 like Garrett Bowles. Here's what he had to say about his quarterback. That's my quarterback in Russell Wilson.
I think he's one of the greatest quarterbacks in the game in the last 10 years. I mean, stats don't lie. Just because you have one rough season, you can't dictate the type of guy and his personality and what he goes through. I was angry with everything that came out because I love him dearly. I take it very personal when people talk about him, because nobody knows him like I do or us here. And so, when you put a heart on the line and you're focused and, you know, things go rocky, you look like the bad guy, but he's not. He's a great dude. You know, he's the same guy every single day. He works his butt off. I'm ready for that stuff to go away. And when it goes, you know, everyone's going to eat crow.
What I find so fascinating about this is all throughout last season, you heard these things through what was a terrible, disastrous season for the Denver Broncos that were very anti-Russell Wilson, how he wasn't able to fit in, and he thought he was above everyone in Denver, right? The office on the second floor, his personal QB coach, Jake Heaps, the input on the offense, all that stuff. It was a bleep show last year. And yes, Nathaniel Hackett got fired, deservedly so got fired. You know Russell Wilson's not going anywhere when you just gave him that big, fat, lucrative contract. And oh yeah, by the way, gave up all the draft capital that you did to go acquire the services of Russell Wilson. But for the most part, up until you had Nathaniel Hackett get fired, there wasn't many people that were throwing a lifesaver out to Russell Wilson and on the Denver Broncos speaking up and speaking out and supporting their quarterback publicly when all this stuff was going down. And that didn't really happen until what I thought was a very fake surge at the end of the season, where there was a push by members of the Denver Broncos to go out of their way to support their quarterback. But at that point, I thought it was too little, too late, and I didn't really take it in a very genuine fashion. I thought it was very forced, and I thought it was very, quite frankly, fugazi what the Broncos were doing in the last 2 weeks of the season supporting their quarterback. But I will say I do appreciate where I haven't really heard many people talking about Russ in a positive way. Not saying there's been negative things being said about Russ leading up to this season, but once you moved on from last year and you gear up for this season, there really hasn't been that much conversation. So it's good at least to see and encouraging to see someone like Garrett Bowles has been a part of that Denver Broncos organization for a while, you know, 6-7 years it's got to be now, that he is still going to bat for his quarterback, where I thought a lot of times throughout last year, the silence from the Denver Broncos in regards to talking about their quarterback did speak volumes and did speak very loudly. So I kind of like that, Hickey, that Garrett Bowles is bringing that same energy that he was at the end of the season, even though he suffered an injury last year, that he's doubling down on it at this point. And really, that's the only way that you could go. Sure, things need to change with the Denver Broncos. Sean Payton's coming in. It's going to be a totally different culture, totally different atmosphere in Denver. He's the captain of the ship right now, not Russell Wilson. But Russell Wilson, we all know, is still an enormous piece for the Denver Broncos. And I think the biggest key here is two things. One, how much will Russ show to the guys that he's changed? But also, how long is it going to take, or how quickly will it take, if you want to look at it from a positive way, will Russell Wilson win back the trust of those teammates that he maybe rubbed the wrong way last year with the Denver Broncos? And that, to me, Hickey, the latter part is really what is going to determine how much success the Denver Broncos could have this year. Not that you really should have a lot of guys on the offensive side of the ball that should be petty and that should be tough to win over. But just because I don't look at the Denver Broncos as having all these great names on the offensive side of the ball, if you can't build that synergy and that chemistry with your quarterback, then you're absolutely screwed and you're just destined to fail from the start. So for me, that's going to be the biggest key when talking about Denver. It is how quickly can Russell Wilson get on the same page with the rest of his offense? Because there was many times last year where he wasn't even looking at one half of the field. You saw players on the offensive side of the ball just so frustrated at the end of the game, throwing their helmet down, just irate because the ball wasn't going to them when they were wide open. That, Hickey, is the biggest part in determining what is going to happen with Denver. And I don't know how long that's going to take to smooth over the problems from last year, but I'll give Russ credit. Russ showed up in shape. Russ looks committed. And that could only go so far, but it's a good start. And even though you look at Garrett Bowles and you're like, okay, what else should you expect him to say? He knows he's got to go down and go down. If you're going to go down swinging and supporting your guy in Russell Wilson. But also, if he didn't sense that maybe Russ was starting to genuinely change and maybe this was a different Russ in year two, that doesn't mean that you just have to blindly support your quarterback and go out of your way to not only support him, but also then say, I can't wait to basically throw it back in the face of the media and have them eat crow, everyone that's been criticizing him.
I hope it's genuine. It is June, so it's very easy if you're Garrett Bowles to kind of throw flowers and say, oh, Russ is going to be great. Russ is going to be great. But
yeah,
hopefully it is early so far. He's seen the buy-in from Russell Wilson, is starting to believe. It's weird to say because he was crushed, rightfully so, last year. But Russ almost got a mulligan last year when you kind of had Nathaniel Hackett get fired. Like, the blame, sure, was still on Russ, but the fall
went
guy
somewhere else. Yeah.
Right, was Hackett. Now, especially with Sean Payton here, if, let's say, Russ repeats what he did in 2022 again in 2023, you still might not be able to trade him just because of the contract, but the blame is going nowhere else but Russell Wilson. Like, you're not firing Sean Payton. I bet you if they had to choose one or the other, they're choosing the head coach of the quarterback. So hopefully also Russ realizes, I have basically no safety valve. Like, I got no out here. I can't point the finger at the coach. I can't point the finger at the players. It's on me. He's slimmed down. Hopefully that means he's taking it seriously. And hopefully,
no longer a sack of potatoes.
Right. Garrett Bowles' comments are more about he is seeing the change in the buy-in from Russ rather than just, hey, I'm the lineman. He's a quarterback. It's June. It's easy to kind of feel good and forget about last year and kind of more blindly believing that Russ will be better last year just because it can't get any worse.
He has 2 years to turn this around. Because we used to have this perception about dead cap money that a certain number, there's no way that you're going to move off of that guy. But that really changed when you saw Jared Goff get dealt, when you saw Carson Wentz get dealt shortly after signing big-time deals. You look at the dead cap money this year and next year. Clearly, he's there this year. It's $107 million. In 2024, on the surface, it's $85 million. But then in 2025, Hickey, and remember at that point, I think Russ will already be like 37 years old. In 2025, the dead cap is $49 million. Not that that is nothing, and you can't just like look at that and go, oh, yeah, that's easy. You could just move past that. But you can move off of a quarterback if it's been 3 years in Denver and you don't have that belief, regardless of what that dead cap is. That dead cap is manageable enough in football terms in the last few years where, yes, it's not ideal, but you can move off a quarterback if the dead cap is $49 million. So this year and 2024, Hickey, are going to be enormous years for Russell Wilson, because if he does not play well this season, you will get that chatter about should they trade Russell Wilson, should they just release him, should they get rid of him. But with George Payton making that call in that front office, and that was his big move to go on out there and get Russell Wilson, and how much they gave up for him and how they went out of their way to give him an extension right away, I would assume he's going to get 2 years more in Denver this year and then the year after that. And then if it's a disaster after that, there's no more defending this guy.
One thing I wonder is if 2023 is a repeat of 2022. We know the NFL is a copycat league.
It really be a repeat, though? Don't get me wrong. I don't know if Russ is ever going to be a great quarterback again, but he was putrid last year. His play was rancid. Is it really going to be that bad this year? For a guy that has been so good for so long, you got to think bare minimum with just Sean Payton coming in, even with myself not loving that offense and the way that that offense is designed this year in terms of the talent on the roster, or what I look at it, the lack of it on the offense side of the ball, don't you got to think bare minimum Russ is going to be average? I'm not asking for him to be great. Like, I'm not saying that he has to be great. He should be with what they gave up for him and also what they paid him. But don't you think bare minimum he could be average this year?
Well, I think he's going to lead him to the playoffs. So I'm high on Russell Wilson. But I'm saying if there's not much of an improvement from last year, if it's still a lot of the same old, and even Sean Payton can't kind of get this offense right with Russell Wilson, what I was going to say was, with it being copycat league, we saw, yes, that the NFL now is, or teams are going to be more open to absorbing more of the dead cap money after Jared Goff, after Carson Wentz were traded.
Mm-hmm.
One team to keep an eye on that I wonder could impact the Broncos, the Arizona Cardinals. If they are bad enough in 2023, where they have the number one overall pick, and they will have a massive dead cap number on their books if they do move off of Kyler Murray, I just wonder if Russ stinks again this year, and you see the Cardinals move off and kind of eat that number, if the Broncos would then say, you know what, another team did it, we'll do it as well. I don't know, again, what trade you could work out, but if you were just that sick of Russ and said, no, anyone but him, or we got this trade lined up and it's going to hurt our books, but we could still do it. NFL against a copycat league, and if you see the Cardinals absorb a dead cap number that starts with the 8 in the $80 million range, I think it makes it a little more palatable for the Broncos to do the same if Russ doesn't improve and they're just so sick of him where they just kind of go, you know what, at this point, anyone but him is an upgrade.
And also, you got to remember, Drew Brees, when he did go to New Orleans, that wasn't via the draft, that was via free agency with the whole Miami physical. Saban wanted him, the doctors wouldn't get him, and all that stuff. He winds up in New Orleans. I wonder, yes, if you're Sean Payton, the reason why he left New Orleans was, we all know, he didn't have a quarterback. And you go to Denver, part of you has to believe in some capacity in Russell Wilson. With that being said, though, I just wonder, if they do get rid of Russ, how much of an excitement is there from Sean Payton to maybe try this a different way, where he, for the first time, gets to draft a quarterback in the first round that he believes in down the road and develop that young quarterback? Because even though he walked away from the game a few years ago, that was just a small blip in eventually continue your coaching career a year later. The guy's only 59 years old. He could go coach Sean Payton for, what, another 10 years if he wanted in this league. So I wonder how much of that really does intrigue Sean to go down the road, get a quarterback in the first round, and mold that quarterback and develop a new relationship with that quarterback. And I wonder how much real estate that takes up in his brain right now. Clearly, the option number one is to fix Russell Wilson, but I wonder how set he is on fixing Russell Wilson before maybe that other part of his brain just takes over and he goes, you know what, Russ doesn't have it anymore. Pete Carroll was right. He's just absolutely cooked.
And that's why, fear Russ, you got to take this year very, very seriously. It's unlikely that they move off you, kind of like with Jimbo Fisher last year. We were kind of talking about him and
he'll
his massive buyout. It's unlikely if things go south, but I don't think it's like a 0% chance, or I guess 100% chance, I should say, he's back in 2024 no matter what. So he's got pressure on him.
I'm rooting against Denver this year. And it has nothing to do against the organization. It has nothing to do with the roster. It has nothing to do with me hating Denver. Like, I've been a pretty vocal proponent of the Denver Nuggets for the last 4 years now. But I'm disappointed in you, Hickey. And your stubbornness really does show. Where last year you said that team was going to go to the Super Bowl and Russ was going to win the MVP. And now, a year later, you're doubling down on them. I thought you would have learned your lesson by now, where you're picking them not to go to the Super Bowl, but you're picking them to win the playoffs. Man, I will be vocally all throughout the football season rooting against the Denver Broncos. And also now my guy Brandon McManus is no longer there since he's now kicking it with the Jacksonville Jaguars. So I have no incentive to root for Denver.
Well, I have lessened expectations. No, they're a wild card team.
You said they're going to be a playoff team. You shouldn't go back to the well with this team.
It is belief in Sean Payton.
Good.
It's not like they're running it back and I'm just going to say, oh, this is the year they figure it out. It's, oh, they have an established coach who is exactly what Russ needs to get back on track here. And I'm going to buy into Russ still having some left in the tank.
And I'm going to buy in that you're going to be wrong. And I'm going to trust those percentages right there. Real quickly, who's the quarterback under the most pressure this year in the NFL?
I think it's Russ.
I think the quarterback we'll talk about the most is Aaron Rodgers. I got to group Russ and Deshaun Watson together. Because it's one thing when you, like, Lamar just got paid. Geno Smith just got paid. But when you look at guys like Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson, they not only got paid, those teams gave up significant draft capital for them. And for Russ, last year was a disaster. Deshaun Watson, I'll just chalk it up to knock it off Russ. But both of those guys this year, in an AFC that's going to be very tough to make the playoffs, and both of their divisions are extremely challenging as well, I don't want to hear any excuses. You're making the money that you're making. Your team invested in you the way they did, giving up all those draft picks, and they believed in you. You got to go to the playoffs this year, and I can't sit here with any confidence right now and tell you that Denver or the Cleveland Browns are going to be in the playoffs. That's just the way that I look at it. So I think those are the two quarterbacks that are under the most pressure this year, Deshaun Watson and then also Russell Wilson. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll take a break. We'll come on back with a little college football fix.
Experiences are what people love most about travel. With Viator, you can browse and book tours and activities so incredible you'll want to tell your friends. They offer everything from simple tours to extreme adventures in over 190 countries. There's something for everyone. Download the Viator app now and use Viator10 for 10% off your first booking. One app, over 300,000 experiences you'll remember. Do more with Viator.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show. We miss college football.
Bennett takes the snap and the shotgun, throws for the corner. Brock Bowers one-on-one. Caught! Touchdown! He ate him alive! Falls down into the end zone. Six more for Georgia.
We can't wait for the 2023 season.
Caleb Williams throws the fade in the corner. Oh, caught! Touchdown, Trojans!
And we're counting down the days to kickoff.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
I said no.
Are we there yet?
What's wrong with your ears?
Here is your college football fix, only on the Zach Gelb Show.
85 days away from the Tulane Green Wave kicking off their football season up against South Alabama. Tulane last year had a remarkable year, where they went from 2 wins to 12 wins, won the American Athletic Conference, had that wild comeback against USC in the final 4 minutes in the Cotton Bowl, and now joining us is the head coach of the Tulane Green Wave, and that, of course, is Willie Fritz. Coach, appreciate the time as always. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, Zach.
Well, I love the video that I saw right after you guys won the Cotton Bowl up against USC, and you guys were having a parade. And when you were addressing the crowd, you jumped into the crowd and you started to do a little crowd surfing. That had to be a fun time for you, Coach.
Yeah, that was a great time. I became a head coach in 1993 at Bloom Junior College down in Brenham, Texas. And, you know, I always had kind of done this little victory song, and I was standing up high when I was doing it, and the kids wanted me to jump out and land in them, so I've done that ever since. So it was a lot of fun doing it after a Cotton Bowl victory, though.
How do you relive all these months later, looking back at those final 4 minutes? Because, Coach, between us, I had money on you that day, and I was very happy when you guys had that crazy comeback.
Well, Zach, I can't talk about all that stuff. You know that. But, you know, it was just, everything went well and all that kind of stuff. It was just we had a big special teams play. We had a big play on offense. We had a big play on defense. You know, just a complimentary type victory with all three phases being involved in it. And, you know, so we needed a little bit of luck. We had the drive before we fumbled the ball, and I think we would have gone in and scored on that. So we needed some good fortune, and luckily we got it.
What did Tulane coach Willie Fritz show the world last year with what you guys were able to accomplish?
Well, I think we've done a really nice job of developing players. You know, we take pride in, getting guys that are good football players, but maybe they need a little time to get a little taller, a little longer, a little faster. Maybe guys that are under the radar a little bit who are dynamite Division I football players. We've also got some guys that were recruited by a lot of people, but, you know, we got quite a few. Heck, I got a lot of guys in the NFL that were their only Division I offer. Darnell Mooney, great receiver of the Chicago Bears. Cam Sample, great defensive lineman with the Cincinnati Bengals. Patrick Johnson, he's over with the Philadelphia Eagles, a great linebacker. So we've been able to find some guys, and I feel like our staff does a tremendous job at developing guys.
It's one thing to develop players, but to see a turnaround from 2 wins to 10 wins, how do you kind of just further explain how your staff was able to accomplish that?
Well, we had a lot of misfortune the year before. You know, we played in 3 bowl games in a row, and one year we lost 4 games on the last play of the game. That's almost impossible to do, but I did it. And, we almost had it turned then, but didn't quite get it done. And then in 21, you know, everybody dealt with COVID in 20. We had Hurricane Ida. And so we all had to go to Birmingham, Alabama. I told the guys to pack for 3 nights, and instead we were there for 27 nights. And just, you know, it had no place to work out, lift weights, practice. About half the time we were able to practice and didn't have really meeting rooms. So we just didn't have a very good season. And, you know, that's on me. I didn't do a good enough job leading the kids. But we knew we had good players, and we lost very few guys to the transfer portal after that year, and had a great off season, great summer, and led to us having a great season.
Coach Willie Fritz from Tulane here with us. Coach, I followed your program from afar. I did go to Temple University, so I know the American Athletic Conference. Actually, someone that I know, Andrew Zuckerman, played for you guys as well. So I've seen your quarterback, Michael Pratt, before. But for people that are just tuning in, I know he's been there for a few years and haven't been able to watch Michael Pratt. How would you describe your quarterback?
Oh, I think he's a stud. He's just really tough. He's got a lot bigger. I think he's 175, 180 pounds when he got here. And, you know, he's 215, great straight line speed. Sometimes a little too tough. I got to remind him about, you know, first down, touchdown, get down. But he's great arm strength, great accuracy. I think he's a definite draft pick. We're just looking forward to him having another fantastic year for us.
And just the nature of the sport right now with the transfer portal, I know that his sister transferred over to play for the basketball team, so that probably helped. Did you expect to lose in this offseason, or did you always know that Michael was going to be back?
No, he's coming. He's a loyal guy. He's a servant leader. His best friends he's going to have the rest of his life are going to be the guys he played with here at Tulane. I think there might have been some guys who were some schools that might have been – possibly contact him in one way or the other. I don't know. But, you know, he was always firm with being here at Tulane.
Willie Fritz, what do you challenge your quarterback to do this year? You guys just won the American Athletic Conference. You just won a Cotton Bowl. You only lost two games last year. What did you really challenge him to do this offseason?
Well, really get to know the offense, you know, for every single guy on the field, their responsibilities. This is going to be the first season that Michael has had the same coordinator 2 years in a row. You know, and there's going to be we're adding some things offensively, but we're not changing things. And I think that's going to help him out big time.
For your program, how do you go about replacing Tajay Spears? We know he got drafted by Tennessee, and last year was just enormous for the success of your football team.
It's going to be tough. You know, I just got done talking to him here about 5 minutes ago. He's a special player, special young man. You know, I'm so excited about his opportunity there with Tennessee. We feel like we've got some good backs, though. We've got really good depth. You know, like on the defensive line for us, we've got 9 guys on the front four who started at least 2 ball games for us in their career. So got a lot of good depth all the way around and at all positions. And that's a big deal for us this season. We want to be a consistent winner. We don't, you know, want to just go to bowl games. We want to go to meaningful bowl games, win conference championships. You know, so that's what we've been talking about with our guys, how we got to improve offense, defense, kicking game in order to accomplish that.
I know every kid is different, and you never know how people are going to handle success, but no one's going to be sleeping on you guys this year with the season that you just had, and you guys are now viewed as the top dogs in the conference. Just how do you think your program will handle the success and build off of that?
I think we're going to handle it well. I've got a bunch of mature guys, a lot of guys that have been in the program for a long period of time. They love the success we had. I think they want to continue to have that type of success year after year. I don't know. As a head coach, every game is its own season, and we just, you know, I worry about that. I don't, you know, irregardless of whether we're playing, someone is, you know, on a hot streak and won a bunch of games, or maybe they haven't. You know, we want to improve every single week. And one of the things we talk about in our program is going 1-0 every week, going 1-0 every day. And that's what it's going to take for us. We got to continue to keep doing that in order for us to, you know, have the sustained success that's eluded Tulane over the years.
Coach, earlier you mentioned that you're 63. I don't know how much longer you plan to do this. I know that you said that you want this to be your last stop. What made you want to stay? Because, you know, I saw your name was rumored, at least in that Georgia Tech job. So what made you want to continue to see things out with the Tulane Green Wave?
Oh, we love it here. My wife loves it here. I love it here. It's been a tough bill. It really has been. With the history of you know, Tulane's had great players. They've had great teams. They just haven't done it, you know, over a long period of time consecutively. So we just enjoy being here. It's good people to work with and for. Our kids really enjoy going to school here at Tulane. We're in a beautiful area of New Orleans. It's a great education, one of the top academic schools in the country. You know, so there's just a lot of great things about it. I'm very lucky to have this job.
What's your favorite meal out of New Orleans? It's one of my favorite places to visit, but what does Coach like to eat the most?
Oh, my goodness. I tell you where I'm getting ready to meet my wife at a place here right now, but I got so many good favorites. We did a commercial for a restaurant the other day. You know, we had, you know, the char-grilled oysters and the roast beef po' boy, shrimp po' boy, red beans and rice, shrimp, etouffee, just everything. It's just, it's different. I had not spent a bunch of time in New Orleans prior to coming here to take this job, and I probably put on 10, 20 pounds. It's been a lot of happy weight that I put on.
Don't you worry. I probably put on 10, 15 pounds when I went to Mardi Gras all those years ago. So it definitely happens, and I was only there for 3 days. Wrapping up with the coach of Tulane, the Green Wave, of course, just won the American Athletic Conference last year, defeated USC in the Cotton Bowl. That, of course, is Willie Fritz. The conference, you lose some schools to the Big 12, Houston, Cincinnati, UCF, welcoming in six new schools to the American Athletic Conference. What's your view of what the American Athletic Conference now offers with the changes?
Well, I think it should be very competitive. We just got back from our conference meetings the other day. You know, it's we've added some really good teams, great facilities, great academic institutions as well. We lost UCF and Cincinnati, Houston. I think we replaced them with six fantastic schools. So, you know, we've kind of gotten out of that distinction of Power Five, Group of Five. You know, I think in the years that I've been here, this is going to be my eighth season. I think, you know, our conference has been ranked above one of the so-called Power Five schools, six of the 7 years. So if you haven't had a chance to watch the American, you're really missing out. It's very, very competitive football.
Coach, one last thing before we let you run. You guys win that Cotton Bowl 46-45. What a remarkable comeback it was. You did go up against the Heisman Trophy winner and Caleb Williams, who had five touchdowns in the game. So many people that tune in, they just like to hear people's perspective about the Heisman Trophy winner and Caleb Williams, who is projected to be the number one pick in next year's draft. Just what was your observations looking back at it, and what made it so difficult going up against Caleb?
Well, he's got all the talent, the ability that you think about with a quarterback, arm strength, accuracy, you know, being able to throw all the different type of balls that you want. But the thing I was really impressed with was his strength. I don't know how many times he shook off tackles. We had him wrapped up. It was a good job of anticipating blitzes or someone tackling him with leverage and then beating the leverage and buying himself more time. I saw after the game, I told some people, I see why he won the Heisman Trophy. He's a dynamite quarterback.
Coach, really appreciate the time. Thanks so much. 85 days away, Tulane kicking off their AAC title defense up against South Alabama. Good luck this year, Coach.
Thank you. Tell Zuck I said hi.
You got it. We'll do. Thanks so much.
All right, roll wave.
Let's walk instead of drive. Talk instead of text. Stay out late and count the stars. Let's get back to the things that matter. Welcome to Kinston, a new site of Sentara in Loveland, Colorado, for people seeking a new home in a new kind of place, where homes are full of character, life is full of variety, and community means people spending time together. Models are open and new homes are selling. Join us at KinstonSentara.com.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. I have two things that I'm looking at when it comes to tonight's game four of the NBA Finals between the Miami Heat and the Denver Nuggets. Denver up 2-1 in this series after a historical performance by Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray. They're the first teammates ever in the history of the sport to go for 30-plus point triple-doubles each in one game. And then Nikola Jokic becomes the first player ever in finals history from his game three performance to go for 30-plus points, 20-plus rebounds, and 10 assists for a triple-double. Hickey, I'm going to try to use your brain here, or see where your brain is at. What do you think the two things that I'm looking at tonight when it comes to this game? I'll tell you right now, one is on the Denver side, and then I'll say it this particular way, the other grouping of players is on the Miami Heat side.
In that case, with the Heat, I'll go with grouping of which role players, if any, can step up. They were non-existent, and guys, use a little play on words here, MIA in Game 3 down there in Miami. Could not find Gabe Vincent, could not find Duncan Robinson.
Name the other. Come on! Can you do it?
Caleb Martin.
No! He's been so irrelevant this series.
He is not. Well, he has me. He's not been very good. Duncan Robinson, Max Strus.
Yes! Those are my three. And, like, you sent me a question before the show. It was something along the lines of, who needs to show up tonight? Who's the biggest key for Miami tonight? And you wrote, is it Jimmy Butler? Is it Eric Spoelstra? Or is it Bam Adebayo? And I read that question, and I was like, neither. Don't get me wrong. They're all important. You need Jimmy Butler to have a great performance. Bam Adebayo is a massive key for Miami. You got to see that with how great he played in the first two games of this series. Eric Spoelstra, you can make the case, as the best coach in the NBA. But game two is the only game this series where you had Max Strus, Gabe Vincent, and then also Duncan Robinson show up. And if they can't get that three ball going, they don't have a chance in this series. And they need to get that three ball going. And look, even in game two, when they got the three-point ball going, there was stretches in the game where Denver still looked like they were the better team. When Denver did go in game two in that 40-14 run, and then also in the final 2 minutes of the game, Denver, who blew the game, then almost took the game back and almost sent that baby into overtime. So you look at the toughness and the grittiness of Miami, and we talk about all these players that get overlooked. I need Gabe Vincent, Max Strus, and Duncan Robinson, two out of the three, if not all three, to start hitting shots from three, because if they don't, I fully expect Denver to win the game tonight. So you got one. That was on the Miami side. Now, what is it on the Denver side? I'd be surprised if you get this.
I will, I guess, go then with kind of similar theme. Can any of the role players on Denver show up? Because equally, they have been bad. Michael Porter Jr. has been terrible. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope has not been very good. They have, again, you've gotten superstar efforts, especially in Game 3 with Jokic and Murray.
Brown played well.
Risky to rely on your two great stars to carry you again, especially on the road in the finals.
Is it, though? Because that's what Denver's been doing all throughout this postseason. I know they've had others step up, like Bruce Brown and Christian Brown as well. And you've seen Michael Porter Jr. go off here and there. You've seen Aaron Gordon go off here and there. But that duo, Joker always shows up. But then when Murray gets going, that right there, just with those two guys in a league of dynamic duos, and you're going up against a Miami Heat team that doesn't have the best talent in the world, if you just get those two guys to show up, I personally think 9 times out of 10, it's going to be enough. In this matchup, especially.
I mean, I think the Nuggets have played like a full team all playoff long. I think that's part of the reason why they're here. It's just like they are a great team where it's not just two players carrying the team, not to diminish what Jokic and Murray have done. They've been great.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think they're here in large part because of what Michael Porter Jr., KCP, Aaron Gordon, the Brown brothers, if you will, what they have done as well. So, yes, they're up 2-1 right now, but also they've gotten very little support, especially the last two games, from anyone not named Jokic and Murray.
Not my key for Denver. My key for Denver goes back to what Mike Malone said after game two. He was appalled by the effort in game two. Now, I'm not surprised in game three that Denver showed up and they balled out. But I want to see now, this is pretty much a similar situation than what it was going into game two, where you have a lead in the series. After game one, you're up 1-0. Now after game three, you're up 2-1. I want to see the intensity and the effort level where it's at early on by the Denver Nuggets, because clearly Mike Malone was agitated by it after game two. And a lot of people after game three said, oh, they listened to their coach. They responded to their coach. That didn't really resonate with me. If what Malone said after game two resonated with the players, you have an identical situation for the most part that after you did after game one. Let's see how much they really listened to that message, because if Denver comes out tonight and plays their game, they should be going back to Denver up 3-1 because they have the more talented roster and they are the better team. So I want to see tonight, will the effort problem that Denver displayed in game two wasn't vindicated to me in game three, but will it come through here, that message, in game four? That is, to me, the thing that I'm most looking forward to with the Denver Nuggets tonight.
I mean, I hope so, because that's really the only thing that's going to keep this Heat team in the series. Like, when the Nuggets are locked in and playing well, I don't really see how the Heat have a chance in the series whatsoever. It's if you kind of let your guard down, open the door. We've seen this Miami team do it against the Celtics, do it against the Bucks. They are elite at taking advantage, and you maybe are not fully locked in.
Now, where are you at on this series? I know you're taking Denver to win, and I took Denver to win going in six, but you've been Mr. Flip-Flop here, where you've always stayed with Denver. But it was at first Denver in five, and then after they won that game two, you were like, okay, I'll go back to Denver in six. I know you had that bet that you made of Denver in five. Did you now flip-flop back after what you got to see in game three to now thinking this is going to be over in five games, or are you then going to stick with six, which you ended up flipping to after, which was game two, if that makes any sense?
Yeah, I think Denver wins tonight, so I'm going to say Denver in five.
Okay. And that just shows you kind of all the overreaction that was happening after game number two. And I don't want it to be disrespectful to Miami. Miami is a heck of a franchise. We all know what they've been able to do all throughout this postseason, down in the second play-in tournament game on the verge of not even really getting into the playoffs late in that fourth quarter. You go on to take care of Milwaukee in five. You dispose of the Knicks rather quickly as well when Jimmy Butler is playing on one ankle. You survive up against Boston after being up 3-0, then get into a game seven. You blow them out of their home court. What Miami has done this year, they're already deserving of a bow. I just never have thought heading into this series or at any point in this series that if I'm Denver, I'm nervous, because you go back to game two, Miami threw everything that they could at Denver, and still there was a chance for Jamal Murray to step up and knock down a shot, and if he did, the game would have gone to overtime. So I could only see Miami getting two games in this series at most, and you know what? It may be a sucker bet tonight, but I'll make a play on this game. I'll take Denver, and I'll take Denver minus 3.5 points. That is, the spread the other night was at 2.5, and it got up to 3.5, Denver. And I was on Denver. Tonight, it's at 3.5. That's a low number for how the majority of people believe Denver is the much better team. So is it going to be a sucker bet? We'll have to wait and see. But maybe I'll end up being the sucker. I am taking, though, Denver minus 3.5. So let's win some dinero tonight. Michael Carter going to join us next from the Jets.